Welcome to A Meaningful Marketplace.
I'm Sarah Massoni from Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center, where I've helped countless dreamers launch their new food products. It's the science of taking a food delight from the kitchen to mass manufacturing and still keeping its great taste. That's what I do. I've been called the woman with the million-dollar palate, although I haven't tried to cash that check yet. Listen in weekly for real-life stories.
I'm Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce and author of Preservation Pantry, Modern Canning from Root to Top and Stem to Core. I love inspiring business owners to get started on their journeys, encouraging folks to be part of their local community, and I'm excited to help business owners tell their stories. Join us as we explore the journeys of women entrepreneurs in the food and beverage industry. Hello and welcome to Massoni and Marshall, the Meaningful Marketplace. We are here weekly to discuss the journeys of food entrepreneurs. We are glad that you joined us today to bring you stories of hope and inspiration. This is Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce.
And Sarah Massoni of Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center. Hi, Sarah Marshall.
Hi, Sarah. I'm so glad that I get to spend so much time with you. So even though our listeners don't know this, we've picked up some new regions, we're recording twice a week, so we get to hang together.
Yeah. It's so cool.
It's so fun. And it's been fun to learn about all these different places and all these different states and things that are going on with makers everywhere. I feel like I'm excited every day to come record with you.
Yeah, actually, Melissa Hemkin is our third host for Wyoming, and she's not here today. And I just was admiring her email response. She has a whole bunch of resources when she's out of the office. And one of them I looked up, it's called Eat Wyoming. And you can find it at eatwyoming.com. And it's a Wyoming virtual farmers market. You won't believe the great things that they have in there. They have it all categorized. So you can just click on the categories. There's meat, vegetables, fruit, pantry, eggs, dairy, and CSA shares. And you can get a veggie box. Learn more about it, click on it, and every 2 weeks for $35.99, you get a 15 to 20 pounds of veggies.
That's so cool. What a cool resource. Do we have something like that in Oregon?
I'm not sure what we have in Oregon, but somebody called Green Sauerkraut from Farmer Fred is on there. There's a shrub ginger mint flavor on there. There's some sausages with blue cheese in them.
Cool. So they're putting together things from the Wyoming region that people can have easy access to. I'm sure that's really great for people in that area. What we're learning about Wyoming is that everybody's very spread out.
It's a big state.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we want to thank our sponsor for supporting Massoni and Marshall. Thank you for helping us spread the word about entrepreneurs. Let's hear a word from our sponsor. The Northwest and Rocky Mountain Regional Food Business Center is the proud sponsor of the Meaningful Marketplace podcast, giving a voice to food from across the six-state region of Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. The Food Business Center supports Northwest and Rocky Mountain food industry makers as part of the USDA's National Network of Food Business Centers, supporting a more resilient, diverse, and competitive food system as a go-to source for small and mid-tier food and farm businesses with a focus on underserved communities, providing education in the form of technical knowledge, business programs, and industry news. We sponsor trade shows, meetups, and conferences to connect growers, producers, retailers, distributors, and processors, all to stimulate business and raise the standards of our storied food industry. Join us as we travel through the six-state region learning more about food makers, food hubs, and food systems. Visit the website at Northwest Rocky Mountain Regional Food Businesses.com to get connected. So we have been partnering with the Regional Food Business Center to bring you people from all these great regions around the country. And so for the next 5 weeks, we're meeting with business owners from the great state of Wyoming. So I would like to introduce you to Sarah Wood. She's the owner of Wyoming Heritage Grains, making stone-milled heritage and ancient grains. And we have all the Sarahs in the house today. Welcome, Sarah.
Whoop, whoop. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. We really want people to connect with you. So how can they find you and your business online and on social media?
Everything is under Wyoming Heritage Grains. It's wyomingheritagegrains.com. Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. It's all the same.
Perfect. You made it easy for us.
Oh, you're on Eat Wyoming too, aren't you, Sarah? I just found you there.
I sure am.
Well, why don't you tell us about how it's wonderful to be in Wyoming and starting a great food business like your family has?
Well, as you were saying before, Wyoming is pretty spread out. We have a population just over 500,000 people, but yeah, it's really hard to connect everybody and let everyone know all the great producers and products that we have available. So Eat Wyoming is a really good resource for that. You want me just kind of talk about how we got into this?
Yeah. Tell us how you got started.
Okay. I am a fifth generation farmer here in the Bighorn Basin. My family came here early 1900s and started homesteading. Our current farm that we have right now, we've had since 1946. And we have grown just about every commodity crop. We've had cows, sheep, pigs, everything. My great-grandparents even at one point were growing watermelon commercially. So we've kind of done it all. I never wanted to work on the farm after growing up here. But eventually after having my kids, I kind of wanted a slower, non-corporate kind of life. So ended up leaving my corporate job. We had already started the mill. I'll backpedal a few years. What I was originally starting was a malting company. So making malt for distilleries and breweries, because we grow some of the best malt barley found in the country with our hot days and our cool nights, we get really high quality grain. So being high mountain deserts, perfect for growing different grains. So we started the malting company, and of course, 2020, that kind of stopped everything with that. And we had been working and getting into the flour mill, and I was kind of thrust into that right at the beginning of the pandemic. I had just quit my corporate job, had my two kids full-time with me, and basically started this entire business while everyone was panicking trying to find flour. So I had to scale up pretty quickly. It was really tough, a lot of learning curves thrown at me, because it's not just simple load the mill and get flour. That you have a lot of different characteristics each grain has. So learning all that really quickly was kind of life-changing there. But we've grown quite a bit. We have now grown, I think it's five or six different grains that we offer in our mill. We've upgraded all of our equipment. It was very challenging, but it was definitely worth it. But I had gone down the rabbit hole quite a few years ago of the differences. A lot of people are growing different heirloom types of vegetables. And I started looking at, different types of heritage, varieties of animals, and other different types of commodities that we used to have available to us that are no longer available, such as grain. Wheat, as everyone knows, Green Revolution, after World War II, they started hybridizing wheat to get higher yields. And because they, had to feed a lot of people after the war. But after those were approved and put on the market in the 70s, it took a few decades, but it finally caught up, and a lot of people have become gluten sensitive. Mm-hmm. That's become a huge thing.
That's mean.
And a lot of it's coming from these hybridized grains. Our bodies just cannot handle them. So myself and others found that we, can't tolerate those types of grains anymore. So all these older varieties that almost went extinct because they don't yield as much. They're about half or a third of what these commodity crops currently are yielding. So it doesn't have, farmers are obsessed with their yields and making as much as they can per acre, but yeah. We've lost the character and the flavor profiles in our food system. And so we started growing all these different grains and realizing their potential. We have, you know, a lot of customers, you know, 20, 30 years have not been able to eat grains, and they're now able to eat these grains again every single day. They don't have to make a separate
what
meal.
What is the best grain that you have for somebody who's not eating wheat, who wants to have a wheat-like experience? That's what I want to know.
Well, all of our wheats still have gluten. I always suggest people start with white Sonora. That's a soft wheat that was brought here in the mid-1500s when Coronado started bringing, you know, the missionaries with him, and they brought that into the Sonoran part of, you know, Mexico and Arizona. And that was originally like flour, wheat flour, tortillas. It's easier for people to digest. I have, like I said, 30 years would get deathly ill if they eat any sort of wheat. They're now able to eat that with no problems at all.
How did you decide which grains you were going to grow and focus on?
It was ones that I could get my hands on. I tried a bunch of different grains. I'm friends with a lot of other mills around the country, and so I would order flour from them and kind of see which ones I really liked. And so we started with the Sonora, then we started growing more Sonora, and we added the Red Fife and the Rouge de Bordeaux, and we raise a rye. And we have a Durum, which is a pasta flour, the Bluebeard Durum. Mm. And we've raised different, more ancient, kind of really old varieties of corn. So we've raised different red corns, blue corns, and green corns. It's just kind of one of those that you just have to try it and see if you like it and see if other people like it.
So we can order directly from you and select what we want, and you just go out and mill it for us?
Sure thing.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
I mill everything fresh to order. So it sometimes takes a little bit longer because I don't have product just sitting around. It's all milled fresh and then shipped out.
That's cool. You said something a minute ago that I think would be interesting to talk a little bit more about. You're friends with other mills around the country. So tell us about your mill and what are some of the things that the mills around the country are doing that you are also doing for your region?
Well, a lot of them are raising these older varieties. It's such a niche market that we all kind of work together to make sure that these grains stay, you know, available to the public. So they're raising these same grains. They're all stone milled as well. That's another piece of the processing is with these hybridized wheats, they became more efficiently milled with a steel burr mill. And with the steel burr mill, they are taking all of the basic nutrition out, and you're just left with the endosperm, which is just a sugar. And so then the FDA requires them to re-enrich. And so you'll see on your flour that it's re-enriched. Mm-hmm. So it's not what naturally is there in the grain. So with the stone mill, you're still keeping a lot of that nutrition intact. You're getting the oils still in there. Your body is responding to it more as a food, and you're not going to get the inflammation or, you know, all the other issues that we have while trying to eat processed wheat.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So, yeah, it's going back to the way it used to be. I mean, each town, as people started settling and, you know, expanding and homesteading, you know, each town had their own flour mill. They had their own butcher. So everything was local, as local as you could possibly get. And with our modernization in our food system, that's gone away. You know, there's only a few rather large corporations that are flour mills, you know, that are meat processing. And, you know, a lot of people saw the bottleneck bottlenecks and what happened with that, especially 4 years ago when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
People were, you know, they've lost touch.
I saw an article about Greece in 2020 having to cut back 50% of the malt production in the region, and it really affected the farms. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, were you selling to any of those big malting houses, or have you always been doing yours independently?
Well, back when my grandpa was farming, we sold to Coors, to Anheuser-Busch, all that. And then and the elevators have just slowly started going away. And then Breeze bought the big elevator just down from my house a few mm-hmm. years back. And no, for us, we've been just raising barley for our facility. I'm using a heritage variety of barley that came from Germany. And so everything I'm doing is old school. All the varieties are old. I have one hybridized red spring wheat because there's some people that prefer that. And that's perfectly fine. But I'm trying to shift more into other ancient grains. I mean, the oldest wheat there is called einkorn. And we do try to raise einkorn. Yeah, we try to raise a few acres of that a year. It's just, you know, when you're used to raising 3,000 pounds an acre for your wheat, and then you go to einkorn, which a good harvest is 800 pounds an acre.
Oh,
it's because you have to dehull it. I mean, it's a huge difference. So you have to charge a lot more, but so many people are seeing the benefit of that they're willing to pay a little bit more.
That's
might
great.
Have to try it.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about where people can find your wheat.
Oregon State University's College of Agricultural Sciences and the Food Innovation Center are proud sponsors of Meaningful Marketplace. With a mission to serve all Oregonians, we are committed to giving voice to those whose food and agricultural stories are not always heard. By providing access and opportunity for a more diverse and just food system, because food brings people together.
So I was just actually, before we get to where they can find your wheat, I was just looking on your website and it says recipes, but I don't see any recipes on there.
The recipes,
what's going
yeah.
on?
It's being rebuilt. The company that I had my blog through for my recipes deleted it. So I have to start over. I know, they didn't even tell me. And then I had some customers like, hey, where's your recipes? What happened? I'm like, uh-oh. So I'm rebuilding all that in my spare time.
Right. Oh, so if you had recipes on there, what is your favorite recipe to use and which grain would you use?
So I always suggest people because, oh my goodness, we're so used to just dumping stuff out of a box and making it that way. I always suggest people start with the white Sonora, and I have a buttermilk biscuit recipe that is amazing. Mm. And so I'll send that to you. Hopefully I have it on the website this week. But the buttermilk biscuit recipe and then my chocolate chip cookie recipe. I try to keep them simple.
Yeah.
Just because.
I think that's a good thing to do though, because it lets your customer, your ingredient is the grain, and it lets that shine by doing a simple ingredient that they're something they're used to, but with this new, improved grain for them to use. So I think it's good to keep it simple like that for sure. And I have
everyone
a question.
Likes a good simple cook.
Yeah, I have a question about just harvesting wheat in general, because I think it's too wet here for that to happen. But do you leave it on the plant to dry, or do you have to take it in and dry it like in a dryer?
Since we are basically a desert, we're able to keep it on the stalk as long as possible. There's sometimes, because we typically harvest end of July, first part of August, sometimes a little further in August, depending. And we do get a lot of rain in August. So there are times that we do have to combine it, and then we have to put it into a bin with a fan to get it to dry down a little bit more. But for the most part, we're able to harvest it and put it up out of the field.
And what percentage moisture are you targeting?
You know? You want below 15%.
Below
15. Typical is about 12, 13%. It'll dry down a little more than that, but anything over 15%, you're going to start ruining the grain.
Yeah. The protein quality is affected, isn't it? So,
not so much the protein. It's just, it's going to spoil. It'll start to mold.
Oh, okay. We don't mold. I saw you're sprouting. You're sprouting and making flour for people as well.
Yeah, we're, we had to focus everything onto the flour mill. So we shut down kind of the malting process on that. But we are, I can't have malting and flour in the same building because of all the moisture that's with the malting. So we're building another facility so we can carry on with the malting and also doing the sprouted flours again. Which also helps digestion because you're bringing out all those nutrients, and then you know it's just that one step closer to being even easier to digest.
So I was asking about how people get your products because I know that you know people out of state can order online and get it, but when you're in Wyoming, do you when you're selling directly to people, do you like? Take it to stores? Do you do farmers markets? Are there places close by that you can sell to? How do you get your grains to people?
I do farmers market in Cody. Also, there's a lot of farmers market stores around the state that are carrying our products. We're just about ready to get into a lot of the bigger grocery stores. Had to wait on some government work on that. Had to get all my labeling and everything approved. So we're one step closer to getting into more grocery stores. But there's quite a few really cool farmers market stores around the state. There's one in Riverton, the Fremont Local Market. The one that just opened in Lander, the Meadowlark Market. Urban Basket in Gillette. Crossy Dairy Freedom Foods in Sheridan. Slow Foods in the Tetons and out of Jackson carries our products. Sweet Cheat Meats in Jackson carries our products. The local food scene is definitely growing rapidly here in Wyoming, finally.
That's great. I see that there's a local pizza place that uses one of your grains. Which one do you suggest for making pizza?
I like to mix because I like... The flavor profiles are great on all these grains, and some of them can be the Bordeaux can be a little overbearing. So I like to mix that one in with the white Sonora, and it's just a really good clean taste to it. It's the Sonora is more of a rich buttery taste to it, and the Bordeaux almost tastes like pretzel. It's really nutty and buttery.
That's good.
That's so cool. I love that there's all these different characteristics and descriptions of the grains that you have, and people can find that on your website too. Do you think there's a grain that tells your story best?
I keep throwing it out there, but the white Sonora is probably the one that tells our story the most. I mean, it you know, basically it was becoming extinct in the 80s. They started using it. They started hybridizing it in the 80s with the Sonoran 64. And it almost went extinct. They were able to save it and they put it into the Slow Foods Ark, which is amazing. Everyone needs to check out Slow Foods. Mm-hmm. But they basically brought it back from extinction. And now there's... a lot of farms, small farms like us that are raising it again. So I think that's probably one of the more important ones. It's because it has also given people hope and it has made them realize how important real food is. And it's definitely changed a lot of people's lives and making their lives easier. They're not having
You're
to make
a paradigm
separate meals.
Shifter. Paradigm shifter right here.
I'm just a simple fan. Yeah. Well, it's so cool what you're
doing.
I have
no idea.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to the future of our health and our industries. And, you know, you're saving something that could potentially have been lost. And I think I always dig it when you talk to people that are like seed savers or people that are focusing on things that would, grains and food that would go extinct. And I think that's really cool that you're keeping these grains alive that could potentially be gone.
Okay, so off topic, your dog is in a lot of your pictures.
That's Hank the cow dog. Yes, he's always my. He just likes to bumble around with me, so he's always there. Whether it's helping me kick out skunks out of the pipes or everything, he's.
What kind of dog is he?
He's the best. He's a mutt. He was an accident. His mama was a standard Australian Shepherd, and his dad is half Anatolian Shepherd, half Great Pyrenees.
Okay, that's how he got the fur. He's cute.
Yep. So he's got very thick coats.
Especially in the winter, I bet.
Very rarely can get him inside. He likes to sleep out in blizzards.
Whoa.
That's the Great Pyrenees in him. Those dogs never want to come inside. They want to be out in the world.
I see you're featured in Women in Wyoming. That's cool.
Yes, that was a really fun project.
Tell us about that.
Lindsay knocked it out of the park with that. Oh, a friend of mine, Lindsay Linton, she just started this whole project and focused on so many different walks of life with women in Wyoming. I had no idea a lot of these women, just kind of pioneers. I don't really see myself as a pioneer, but it was really fun to be included in the project.
Well, we always like to send people to buy directly from you. So whether they are local or not, what's the best way to get your grains?
Definitely online, WyomingHeritageGrains.com. There's a online store there. If there's something you don't see, you can always send me an email. We can try to figure something out. But for the most part, yeah, it's all online. And I appreciate everyone's support. But also, if you have a mill near you, please use them as well. I'm trying to focus people on using a regional as close to home as you can get.
Yeah, in our region in Oregon, it would be Camas Country Grains or Camas County Grains they're the ones that are milling it, which isn't that common, you know. And so that's the only one that I know locally. But I think that the varieties that you do are really cool too. So if people want to check out new stuff, I think that they can get them from you. So if they order them on your site, they come packaged in a 1 pound bag or something along those lines?
We do 2 pound, 5 pound, and 10 pound.
Perfect.
And larger amounts if they'd like that.
You had mentioned corporate world, and I was just curious, when you left the farm when you were younger, maybe you went to college and then got a job, what was it that you actually did before you came back to the farm?
Oh, I did a lot. My last corporate job, though, was I was an accountant for oil and gas company.
I mean, because
I did a lot of office manager.
A lot of our listeners are out there. They're going, I wish I could leave my job. I want to be a food entrepreneur. Oh my God. Let's go buy a farm and then we'll grow things. So it's nice to hear a little bit about that transition. Can you tell us anything else about what was the hardest part about going back to the land?
It really wasn't. I mean, I still lived on the farm. That wasn't my full-time job. I was still doing farming, outside of my corporate job, on the weekends. I mean, evenings, that was everything. We, still had cattle, still had, setting water. We were doing hay. So it was just, I unloaded my corporate job and then just focused on that. And I was actually able to spend more time with my kids. Mm-hmm. And they were really little at the time. They were only 3 and 4 at the time, almost 3 and 4. And so that was another tough transition for them, was being home with mommy all the time. Mm-hmm. And
I know that your kids are young, but do you think that they will take over the farm, or do you see that in their future?
If they want to, I'm not going to push anything on them.
Yeah,
it's their decision.
They've taken a great interest in it for sure. They help me all the time in the mill. So that helps. They enjoy it, but I'm not going to push anything on my kids. If they want to take it over, that's perfect. I would hope that they would want to, but it just doesn't work. If you try to push something on someone, they're going to resent it in one way or another. So I'm leaving it completely open to them.
I think that's great. I think that's something that's changed over time. Even with, we have a lot of farmer friends, and I do the farmer's market with lots of farmers. And, I think it was kind of expected that children would take over the farm, but now there's so much other opportunity. And I think a lot of people kind of leave it as you do. Like, if this is what you want to do, you can. And just like you did, you came back to it, probably because you had the opportunity to do something else first.
So you keep a pretty robust pantry on the farm, so you can make just about anything in your kitchen. I always wonder about that.
I do. I've been so busy with the mill, I've neglected my garden, but I have. I don't even want to tell you how many tomato seeds and everything started, and I'm kind of panicking now because I can't put them out till the end of May. So I'm going to have to find a place to put everything. But I do. I have 3 freezers. One's full of homegrown beef. I've got, my shelves are full of canned goods. So I do. I try to make everything that we possibly need a year at a time, sometimes 2 years at a time, because you never know if you're going to have a crop failure. Yeah. So I try to have at least, 2 years worth of whatever we need in the pantry.
Yeah. Do you use anything from the grocery store?
There's some things. But for the most part, I really do try hard to keep everything from our place. It's just so much cheaper, and what's in it. Because reading food labels, it's pretty scary what's in food labels anymore.
Well, that's the thing about food security, too, is if you have 2 years worth of food in your home, pretty much safe for 2 years. That's a good thing.
Are you friends with other farmers that are in your area? Like, do you hang together?
When we have time, most of us are running around with all of our little kids. And, when we do get a chance, we do hang out, but it's usually at baseball games or school functions. So we do as much as we can because, we do that and then get the kids to bed and then go to work again. I mean, there's a lot of times I'm out in the mill till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, dear.
Just trying to get caught up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing I kind of learned knowing different farmers from different areas is that even if they're right next to each other, sometimes they won't see each other like the whole year. I mean, unless they have kids in school, that's kind of like the thing that brings them together. But otherwise, they don't really. And, here we have a canning club where people from their different farms or just gardens will can different things. And then you come together once a month and trade. And I just think it's like a nice way to bring together people in your area and hang out. And we all bring a different pie that we made with the jam that we did or whatever. But it just kind of keeps people connected, because I think otherwise we all get so busy that we don't see each other, connect with each other, and our lives are so similar. The things that we're all doing are very much the same. So it's nice to be in the same room every once in a while.
Sarah Marshall, do you have 2 years worth of food at your house?
We do, yeah. But I think that's unique for Portland.
Yeah.
Because I think we, I do so much canning and preserving, and we have lots of freezers and I have lots of things, stocked. But we also don't really live to where we could walk to a grocery store. And I think a lot of people do. You know?
Yeah. I could walk to your house, though, if I'm really hungry.
You could. Come on over, Sarah. If we are, if we need, if we need food, I've got you.
Okay, good. Oh, Sarah Wood, what else do you want to tell our listeners? I see you've been on a couple other podcasts. Is there any adventure or family story that you'd like to share?
Oh, gosh. If you decide to become a farmer, just don't expect to be rich. Expect to work a lot and be really poor. That's what I can give someone because it's... Yeah, but I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't want to go back to a desk job. I'm just so much more connected. And especially, we switched our farming practices 5 years ago. We switched to no-till, and that's made life much better.
Mm-hmm. You know, what does that
using
mean exactly?
More of the... So we don't plow, we don't till the ground anymore. And that's really important for growing healthy soil. Tilling it the ground
soils
wants to be covered
layers,
all the time.
Right.
And when you have that's the thing is when you till, you're disturbing all the microbes. You're destroying those mycorrhizal fungi and you know, the entire ecosystem. And so you're just fighting it. You're just going to continue to have weeds. You're going to have to continue to use chemical fertilizers. It's so much simpler just to go no-till, kind of the regenerative way of ag. And a lot of people are switching to that because they're tired of, you know, all the corporations, big ag basically saying, hey, you know, you need these fertilizers, you need these herbicides, you need these fungicides. When you just let nature do its thing and you kind of guide it in a way that helps you and it returns tenfold to you. Mm-hmm. So with us, it's no-till. We're doing companion planting. We do a lot of cover crops. We do it's messy. It looks messy, but that's how nature is. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be all this monocropping. When you have monocropping, you're inviting pest pressure. You're inviting you know, all these diseases. So why not, you know, plant pumpkins with your corn? I mean, there's so many different ways that the Native Americans had it down with their permaculture. And so that's what we're trying to bring back. And at first people were looking at us like we were completely crazy, but now I'm having bankers call. I'm having all these other people call and going, hey, we want to switch. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not making any money. We're spending all of our money on all these amendments and, you know, fertilizers. So we would like to keep that for ourselves, you know, maybe actually be able to make the farm payment.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like a margin.
That's probably what
gain.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And then you're not spending all your time in the tractor. Instead of doing 5 or 6 passes with your plowing, your roller harrowing, your leveling, all that, you do one pass. You go and you no-till your seed in there. You may have to go in every couple years. We've had to go in and kind of open up our furrows, which is how we irrigate. We use furrow irrigation. And we'll have to maybe knock down some of the cow trails. But for the most part, that's all we do. We're not out there for weeks at a time preparing the ground. It's a kind of a one-and-done thing.
I feel like it gives farmers like a little bit more quality of life improvement because you don't have to spend so much time tilling. There's a really good documentary series. I just saw the preview, so I'm not sure if it's out for everyone to see. I went to like their opening ceremony, but it's called Roots So Deep. If people want to look it up, they have a website and you can get on the newsletter and then they'll tell you when it's out. But it's all about that. And they studied different farms that were right next to each other. And, you know, one was doing the no-till method and one was doing the traditional plowing and fertilizing method. And so they, if people are interested in knowing more about that, I suggest connecting with that documentary series. Well, unfortunately,
absolutely, or like Kiss the Ground.
Yeah.
I kissed the Blarney Stone once.
Well, ladies, unfortunately, it's time for us to wrap it up. But Sarah, I am so glad that you were able to come on the show and tell us more about Heritage Greens and learn more about what you do on the farm. And I really think you're doing something special there in Wyoming. So thank you for keeping those grains alive. We appreciate you.
Paradigm shifter.
Thank you, Sarah and Sarah.
We record.
No, just a simple farmer.
Well, that's the best kind. Thank you for what you do.
Yes.
We record Missoni and Marshall live every week. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes. Thank you to our audio engineer, Lon, and our production assistant, Chelsea. If you want to be a guest on the show, you can DM us on our Instagram, Missoni and Marshall, and we'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for joining. Bye.
Bye for now.
You're listening to the Startup Radio Network. Listen, learn, launch. 10% of our gross revenue goes directly to women entrepreneurs in developing countries around the world through Kiva's microfinance program.